Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 139 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another TDD TIE. They don't do that in Europe with Mr. David Pallant and Scott Dienbach, and they are actually right here, like looking over my shoulder, listening in, just waiting in anticipation of talking about Cyclocross World. I know it was a couple weeks ago, but we still have a lot to go over from those races. And then we're going to catch up and actually talk about the Cyclocross Super Prestige and David Bay Action, and maybe even Bricocross. I don't know. There's so many races going on that happened recently. But hey, guys, what's going on? I should say one of you. Everybody talking at the same time. Scott, what's up?
Yes. It's going good, man. Ready for some more TDD TIE action.
Yes.
David,
do you feel like it's not like we're just off to the wrong foot if you don't actually say welcome people to TDD TIE?
Well, I think you go out of your way to try and throw me off at the beginning of every show. So, you know, that's nothing new.
Okay. let me just ask David, should I, because I feel like now I'm hosting, which is a position I just don't want to be in for this show. Do I need to like tell Scott to start the show?
I think we should have Scott start the show. Otherwise, his feelings get hurt. And then, like, as we did, you'll see when you get a chance to view our Bike Shop CX, when his feelings get hurt and he starts on a rant, that jocular laughter just goes away.
I don't see it as his feelings getting hurt, more as he is trying to put things right in the universe. And that's I think, what we need to do right now. We need Scott just to put things right in the TDD TIE universe. So go start the show, Scott.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back for another edition of TDD TIE. They don't do that in Europe with me, Scott Dienbach, as always, in the center square, Mr. David Pallant.
Hey, cyclocross friends, how good it is to be back following worlds.
Wait, you stole Bill's line.
That's okay.
Because he hovering
I
above
said
us.
It first.
Bill Shiken.
Oh, hi. Yeah. That's me. The guy who was talking for the first minute.
Oh, God. That was awesome.
All right.
That was
now
awesome.
We're good.
So everything, the universe is back restored.
It
so
is restored.
We have tons of cyclocross results, including the World Championship. And Bill, you were there, man. Tell us about it. Give us a little bit of the flavor to start us off.
I will, but before we do that, we have to talk about this. I'm already throwing a wrench into things, but the breaking news happening right now that I just feel like
yes.
we need to address straight up, since he's been such a huge part of this show for so many years, is Kevin Powell's announcing his retirement.
Like 10 minutes ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a great career. Just a solid, solid career, some great wins in there for him. And just, I mean, huge fan club, too. I mean, you see his fan club everywhere chanting, Kevin Powell's, just like that. And we always said, we had the thing where we would call third place, Kevinth place for a while there. Wasn't it third place?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So just a great career. And it's going to be sad. I know Jeremy Powers was talking on Saturday during the GCN broadcast a little bit about him. He was thinking that Kevin would do one more year kind of as a final tour, of every race. And so he could kind of say goodbye to his fans for a season. But I guess not. It's not going to happen. We got one more race with Kevin in it, right?
Yeah. 2 weeks will be his final race at Ustmalle. So
the big question that our viewers want to know, Bill, is can you reach out to him? Can we have him on a show?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if that one's going to be possible. He's the kind of guy that I always like because he would do the pre-race interviews. He would do everything, but definitely not a guy who was searching for the spotlight. Just went out there and did his thing. So here's just reading cyclocross24.com, just put this out there. 5 times he was third place at Worlds.
Kevin's place
secured. And
yes.
So the question being, and I think it's a pretty easy answer, although people chime in, let us know on Twitter or at feedback@cxairs.com. Is he the greatest racer never to win a world title?
Maybe the only one I could put in there is Katie Compton.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, that would be the next, though she'd be in, you know, in that discussion, I think, for sure. So
spoiler.
But yeah, he's up there.
Spoiler alert.
What, for our results for the,
yeah.
Like people don't already know.
Vanderpool. That was everywhere. That, you know, my caption was even like, if you were, you know, an accredited photographer and didn't get this shot, you know, they're not going to give you a accreditation going forward, just of him like with his bike over his head after
right.
he won. And like some guy on my Instagram is like, Sunday and a winner of the picture, you know, how about a spoiler alert or something. I was just like,
oh, for God's
sake. I just responded. I was like, you know what? Live sports are live. You know, if you don't want spoilers, that's on you. You need to get off social media because this is not
exactly.
This isn't, you know.
Right. I'm going to go look at all social media and then complain about anybody
spoiling.
Yeah,
I have no, there's like nothing. I don't care about that. It's like if you know, people are live tweeting, they're doing everything else. Like if you don't want to know who won something, then that's on you.
Stay off Twitter for sure. Because that's what Twitter is. Right.
Right.
Why would you, if you don't want to know, why would you even go there? So, all right. Well. Yeah, I mean, I would say 5 world championship podiums. Man, oh man,
yeah,
that's
couple. Well, at least one I know of. I think he won it more. He won nationals more than that, and that's a huge deal as well. Being Belgian national
sure.
champion, yeah, well,
yeah. So that,
great
that's
career.
Too bad. I know he was
great career.
Yeah, they were still. You know, his team was still talking about potentially continuing his contract for one more year, but I guess he just didn't want to, or maybe they decided not to, and he said, okay, then this will be it, or whatever. But yeah, it's gonna be sad. It's not gonna be the same without him there, but
he can go do a
that's all right.
He can go do a beach races, mountain bike races with Klaus.
There
that
you
seems
go.
To be the
there
big things, huh?
Yeah.
These beach races.
But it's kind of interesting. So this now turns into, well, I mean, he was already, you know, but Michael Van Turnhout already the leader of that team. And I guess him and Ellie Easerbeats, it's like it's their team now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's going to be the young guns now are going to be there. You know, I'm sure, but it'd be great to have Kevin. He's just a fountain of information, I'm sure, for them, and has been, but probably will continue to be. So cool. All right. Anything else, Bill?
Well, David's sending us these photos, and you know, we can post these, but it's the famous picture that we've used forever of Wout Van Aert, go Wout's teammates with the kid holding up the sign, you know, and which is just classic. So, and then it looks like a very similar look. Are those the same frames?
That's my question.
I think it is. So there's another kid, and it looks like the exact same kid, except he's wearing a rainbow jersey, and he's holding up a sign that says "Go Matthew Vanderpool." And do you think that he just like changed allegiance like that?
I don't know. That was my question to you guys. That's the big question.
That's why
I don't care about the world stuff anymore. Yeah, we need to get to the bottom of it.
I mean, that's all big stuff. I get it, sort of. But if this kid's changing his allegiance. This is big. What are you saying to us there, Scott?
If it's not the same kid, they are very, I mean, it looks like the same kid.
Doesn't
maybe
it?
They're brother. Maybe they're brothers and they have a split.
Has somebody
split allegiance?
Is this,
they're twin brothers.
Is this story already out there, or are we breaking this now? Is this
we may be breaking it. I don't know. I haven't seen it somewhere else.
But you just saw this on the broadcast?
Yes, I did.
This is great investigative journalism. This is like Pulitzer.
It just goes to show what you can do with the internet.
That's right. I figured out my game, and now I'm like on these other things.
I'm bored, so I'm on to other stuff.
Amazing. Well, we're going to have to dig deeper into that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I can't wait to
We might have to send a correspondent over to find that out.
Yeah, I'm just gobsmacked that he would just dump Wout and his teammates like that.
Yeah.
Especially the teammates. He cared so much about the teammates.
And when he had an opportunity to wear a rainbow jersey in the past, he didn't.
Maybe much like Wout, he's just decided that the team has, you know, the team management was the problem here and that he's just jumping ship.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the Go, Go, Go Wout's teammates a road race?
No.
That was the race that he wasn't there. One of the races I think that Wout didn't
I thought that was on a road race for some reason. No. All right, well then it is a mystery. Now I'm really, I don't know what to say. Do you guys want to talk about Worlds?
Nah. Not anymore.
Bill, you were going to tell us.
I mean, there's so much more. I'm just like, yeah, I was going to
tell. This is so much more compelling.
Denmark. Denmark.
Yeah, what'd you think?
What did I think? I liked Denmark as a nation. It was fun to go to. Everybody there was super cool. I'm glad I, as they say in Europe, hired a car. Because we were staying in Unza and then driving every morning down to Bonza for to the race venue. Worked out really well. It was interesting. Just even getting there, I showed up and went in there, got there early, went and got my credentials, and I had this media credential that said new media on it instead of photographer, even though my little letter and everything I filled out was to get a photo vest and be accredited as a photographer. And it turns out that for whatever reason, when I got accredited for Road Worlds in Richmond in 2013, I had gone under like CX, you know, in the crosshairs, and it was under new media. That was the one that seemed to fit the most. And it was probably because at that time I didn't have like an actual, like, you know, photo
client.
Well, not even that. It was you have to be a member of organizations to get, you know, Europe is still into their whole guilds and all that kind of stuff, so you have to, have your member number of whatever photo guild you're in, which I am now, but we don't have to go into the weeds with that. But so the easiest way to do it was like, here's the website I'm doing this for, here are all the stats for the website, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, okay, and I got my credentials. Well, that information was still in the UCI database. So they didn't even like...
And got carried over.
Yeah, and they didn't even look at what I had put in for this one. And I just got there and I got like this new media. I didn't even think about it until I went to get my photo vest and was very sternly told that I would not be given one because I didn't need it since I was new media. And that didn't, you know, that wasn't a... So,
now, why would you assume that they would read the current application, Bill?
Exactly,
I mean, this is the UCI.
But
I seem to remember that when you came to Cross Vegas some years ago, you needed to put some money under the table to the person responsible for the media.
Well, that's a whole different story of, you know, the tiered system of you know, prince versus duke versus queen versus king in the photography world that corresponds to what color bib you get.
That purple bib was a hot item.
Well, it was probably, was it actually purple or were they red?
Video was purple, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I didn't care about the video. It's getting it's the red bibs. The red bibs are top of the...
They're like the all-access pass of bib world.
The red bib is the one that you want, and, you know, they only have, like, 20 of those. After that, it's, like, the yellow bibs, and, you know, and then the videos are blue. But, yeah, so...
And wait, so just in case Brooke Watts is listening and people are listening that don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The media person at Cross Vegas was Mr. David Palin, everyone. And it wasn't really an under the table payment.
No.
He's just joking. Okay. All right.
Although the photos may show otherwise.
It sounded like a little bit like he might have been serious there, so I just want to make sure in case Brooke's having a heart attack right now.
Man, we're not going to Fayetteville. We're going to be banned from Fayetteville now.
Okay, all right, continue. Yep.
So, regardless of that, I had a couple emails and talking to some of them, and I got my photo vest, so it all worked out well. But then in that whole, just confusion of that, I never picked up a parking pass.
Oh,
and parking was just, insane, because they're basically like, oh, you can just park on the street, or they're like, shuttles and parking lots far away, which I just didn't want to deal with. And the first day I got there, like on Saturday, I got there so early, and I showed the guy at the at the gate, into the venue, and I showed him my media pass. He was like, oh, that's fine, go up. So I was like, oh, sweet. So then I would just drove up to the front of the media center and tried to park there, and the guy was like, not a chance.
No.
Do you know who I am?
It was like right on the finishing straight, and then he was like, you need to go get a parking pass. And I was like ready to go on course. I was like, I can't do that now, because the accreditation place was a kilometer away. So I ended up sort of backtracking out of there. And this is where, in Denmark, everybody is very respectful. They're all following the rules and all this kind of stuff. And I even had, somebody who was covering their first race. And I think I was doing something like climbing onto part of a course somewhere. He's like, you're just going to do that? I was like, dude, if you're asking if you can do stuff, you're not going to last long. In this world, you basically just have to go for it. And if somebody tells you can't, then you move on. But it was the same kind of thing. So there was the main city center that they had closed off half of the road, so you couldn't enter onto it. But I could see where people probably who were residents had parked on the street, and some guy was pulling out in this blocked off road, 200 meters from the course, but on street parking. And I'm like, we're going around this barrier. Zoomed out, sort of hooked onto the sidewalk a little bit, got back onto the road, parked in there, and got that. And I was there early enough in the morning, got that same spot both days. And I was like, this, whatever else happens this weekend, this is a victory. Yes. I am
gods
closer,
are smiling
closer
on me
than the actual media parking. Yeah.
And, right. Yeah.
That's classic Boston parking there too. Snowstorm parking, you'd shovel it out. You put your own trash can out there. That's yours for the winter.
Oh yeah, dibs, man. You gotta put that in your dibs. Yeah. It's the only reason those people have lawn chairs.
That's right.
Right.
They should call them street chairs.
Exactly.
All right, so now you're there. What else? I mean,
it was we all saw the venue, and it was pretty much, I think, how it showed on television is how it was. It was weather-wise, I thought it was, I didn't, it wasn't too cold. It was kind of interesting. Even today I looked on the weather, since in DC it's right around freezing and they're actually delaying school and that stuff. So I was looking at the weather report, and for the app I was looking at, it was still for Denmark. And I was like, it's 44. It seems like it's colder than that. So that's kind of where they're at. I mean, they were hovering right around freezing for the whole time, a little over it. Mm-hmm. the first day overcast, second day was sort of clear and sunny. So weather, I thought it was pretty much perfect as far as the conditions went. I know there was a lot of people thought the track was pretty boring, especially for a world's course, and it definitely was different. It definitely wasn't as there wasn't as much to.
It's not Zolder.
It's not Zolder. Exactly. There wasn't as much. There weren't as many puzzles to solve. There was basically one puzzle to solve that was crucial for every race, which was that tricky off camber on top of the hill. But other than that, it was kind of you know, it was a lot of long power sections, but you know, we look at it like, look at Road Worlds every year. Every year it's like, okay, this is going to be a good one for the sprinters, or, you know, this year, oh, the sprinters don't even need to go because there's so many climbs on it, so much elevation change. This is going to be for an all rounder, or this is going to be, you know, so it's like,
yeah,
every year,
it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing here, although the best racers tend to win for cyclocross.
No matter what the course.
Yeah, and so, and I think the one saving grace for this track and for this venue that they can always thank the UCI for is mm-hmm. that as soon as it was over, they released the map for next year in Switzerland. And that
you think,
is like
Switzerland.
Pancake,
oh, it's gonna be
the Alps. You have Alps. You have elevation change there.
Right. Those are the EKZ. The whole thing. We look at those races and we're like, holy cow, look at those descents. That's insane. Look at those climbs. Oh my goodness.
When Worlds is there, it's gonna be crazy.
Yeah. Now we have Worlds with what, like 10 feet of elevation for the whole track?
But they will put in some interesting features that will be the elevation change.
Yeah, it's gonna be Playland. What are they Cyclocross gonna, Playland.
They're gonna have to build a, like, yeah, they're gonna have to build a huge something to, I don't know. We'll look back on this world and say, man, I wish it was as technical as Denmark.
Exactly. I think they're gonna bring in. I think Brooke's gonna get the call to go in there and build all the Cross Vegas
sand little piles and
and then
a banked wood 180.
Yep.
Yep, there we go. Well, you know, I have to say, when I watched the first two races on Saturday, I thought I was really not loving the course. But then I saw the women's race on Saturday. I was like, okay, there's actually some stuff in here I kind of like, you know. And it's not as terrible as I thought. Is it my favorite world course ever? No, but this is what you get, you know, in cyclocross, and I got no problem with it. And I think they overall it looked great. They did a great job. So there you go.
As a photographer, it was awesome, because if you
could get around easy.
Well, yeah. So anybody who had a photo bib was allowed to go on the hill and on top of the hill, and then everybody else was down in that swell. So all the spectators were away. So you could get around. You know, it was a little tricky because there were definitely parts where you had to sort of skirt across the track, and you know, there was this big cemetery wall that they didn't want you walking on, you know, which is fine, which some people respected and some people didn't, but you know, there was a lot of yelling about that. But yeah, so it was definitely, you had to maneuver at some point the big platform that the crane was on for the camera, that big sweeping camera up top. You actually had to make myself very small and basically crawl underneath that three or four
times
a race. Yeah, to get around that. So it was good stuff. Good stuff.
So did it remind you a little bit of Hartford Nationals?
That was the first thing I thought of when I got there. I was like, we have one hill and we're going to use it as many times as we can. And that was basically, I mean, Hartford, look at Hartford if it didn't have all of the sections that weren't used. Like, if they had used every section that was originally set up for Hartford, you would have been on that hill five different times a lap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not terrible either.
No. No.
No. No. No. All right. Well, sounds cool. Sounds like you had a great time. I'm glad you went, and that's all awesome. And now now all eyes are towards Lafayette or towards Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah.
that kind of is overshadowing the Switzerland thing right now. Everybody is going so crazy about that.
That was a crazy one. And I saw Brooke and he was very tight lipped. And then the next time I saw him, I got a nice, Fayetteville, World's hat.
Nice.
Yeah. Fayetteville is what I meant. Yeah. So that's going to be exciting. That's going to be cool.
Yeah. It's just crazy how these things work to the point that, and I don't know why I'm being asked this, but from people very high up in the cycling world texting me, asking me if it's Arkansas is happening because I'm there, and somehow by osmosis I would know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here in the U.S., you go to those meetings for the USAC stuff.
For sure.
Yeah, but that's this true. Is...
I understand that, but he knows, so that's why people would ask him.
Yeah. I did there know, too.
Of course you did. See?
Well, see, now they're really going to ask you even more.
All right. Yeah.
Let's talk about results.
Okay.
We got the men's... The men's junior race was the first race we saw on Saturday. Top five to give the wide angle podium in first place, Ben Tullett with a commanding ride. Second place, Witsi Musin. Third place, Ryan Kortjens. Fourth place, Thibaut Nies. Fifth place, Pim Ronhar. I thought, I've already kind of said this, this wasn't my favorite race. I thought it was kind of, and partially because Ben Tullett dominated it so much. I mean, he basically
crushed it,
makes
sure.
his move, rides away from everybody, and it's kind of like race is over. But
so you're saying that Ben Tullett's bad for cyclocross?
No, I think he's great for cyclocross. He looks like an awesome kid. Never met him, but he just looks like an awesome kid and is certainly a top-notch rider. So yeah, I think it's an exciting future for him and for the British cyclocross fans. So.
Yeah. Sure.
Anything else you guys want to mention?
Just how dominating his ride was. He led from the gun, had the fastest first lap, and then second lap led up a little bit, but then third, fourth, fifth, sixth lap, fastest lap times. That's kind of unheard of.
Right.
I mean, he was just crushing the fastest laps. And then, so his sort of taking his time to enjoy it on the last lap, he was 16th fastest lap, still wins by 20 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly was, like you said, certainly was at that point playing it safe. His lead was so huge. Just
so
play
his,
it safe,
15,
get around the course.
So, yeah. So Wheatsum Mason was 15 seconds faster than him on the final lap, and he still came in 20 seconds later.
So that means he was, what, 39, 40-ish seconds
it was
ahead?
Just, it was dominating. Yeah. Just dominating.
Yep. And there were, it was like never, once he took off, it was kind of never in question. I mean, it would have taken a major mechanical to change the outcome of that, and off he went. So, I mean, even if he punctures at that point, he's got plenty of time to get limp around the course, come in, get a new bike, and still win, you know, by a long amount. So, all right. Americans in the race. In 18th place was Alex Morton. In 22nd place was Nick Carter. Where did the rest of the guys finish? In 41st place was Jared Scott. And in 51st place, Andrew Strohmeyer. And in 53rd place, Lucas Steerwalt. And that's everybody, I think. So there we go. Any comments?
No. This was just kind of like, it was interesting to see the first race go off. It was, you know?
Yeah. It was what it was. Not a huge performance by the U.S. juniors, but, you know, they were there representing it well, so hats off to them for that. So, all right. Anything else you guys want to talk about the juniors? Are we moving on?
Moving on.
All right.
Moving on to men's U23, which was the next race of the day on Saturday. Top five in that race. First place, Thomas Pidcock. Wait a minute. Wasn't Thomas Pidcock riding in the elite men's race? Because they seem to talk about him an awful lot.
Oh, we already going down to the talking about the announcers.
I mean, wasn't there like 10 minutes of conversation about Thomas Pidcock during the elite men's race? Why would they do that if he was in the race the day before?
From the two British commentators?
Yeah.
The team guy?
All right. Thomas Pidcock in first place. Second place, Ellie Easerbeet. Third place, Antoine Benoit.
Yeah.
Fourth place.
Thank you, Twitter.
Thomas Capecchi. And in fifth place, Jakob Dorogoni. Maybe it's, I know I like the Dorogoni. It's got to be Italian, right?
I'd say Joni. I'd go soft G.
Yeah.
Dorogoni? Dorogoni.
Yeah.
Dorogoni.
I'm on the soft consonants just because that's everything in Denmark, and that's where, you know, we were actually joking.
That's where the race was.
Well, that's the thing that we're kind of joking with the a local local reporter in there who was, you know, telling us, I mentioned it when we were, I was talking to Zach, just how harsh we were in trying to pronounce. Like everybody wanted to say, everybody wanted that, that hard G, Bogens, Bogens.
Bogens.
Bogenza. Yeah, yeah. It's like, nah.
Go ahead, David.
That brings up a really important question that us as the slovenly Americans always want to know. Like when you go to France and order toast, you don't get French toast. When you go to a coffee shop there and just order a Danish, what do you get?
Pastry?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
It's all a Danish.
Fish.
You order a Danish and they give you fish. You got to be more specific than that.
That's right.
You
get a fish.
But yeah, we'll give the Americans results in a second, but Thomas Pidcock, as dominating of a performance as the race before that for the U23. Well, looking at our picks really quickly, I think two of us picked Thomas Pidcock, and that would be David and Bill.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Who picked Pidcock Easerby?
David picked Pidcock. Well, actually, you both picked Pidcock Easerby.
There we go.
So there you go. And then, David, you picked Ben Turner, and Bill, you picked Gage. So,
yeah.
I was bring this up anymore after my picks fell apart. But, okay.
That's the one you got.
That was the one I did okay with.
Yeah, I had Easer beat Turner, Pidcock. So there we go. Well done, guys. Well done. But yeah, I mean, we got to give Thomas. I mean, I joked about Thomas Pidcock being talked about in the elite men's race, but the reason why is because he dominated so much in the U23 race, right? I mean, he was untouchable. So
he's quite a racer, no question about it.
Well done. Well done, for sure.
And it was, you know, looking at these lap times, the interesting thing is those guys farther down in the standings in the later laps who are putting in the fastest laps, like Dorazzoni, you know, had the 6 fat, you know, on the lap 6, he's the fastest, you know, and the guys ahead of him are, you know, Benoit is like 5th fastest, you know, so they were still battling with each other farther back, where Pidcock really for the last 3 laps was kind of on cruise control. Like he got that big lead and then he had a 30-second lead after with 3 laps to go, and then just kind of mailed it in, and you can see his lead, you know, just dropping from 29 seconds to 28 seconds to 24 seconds to 15 seconds by the time he took it, which is almost, you know, what his countrymen did in the race before. It's like those guys just crushed it early and then were able to just sort of go into cruise control for half the race.
Yeah I think, you know, we have had the big Pidcock Easerby kind of rivalry in the U23 ranks for a while. And I think in order for Easerby to beat Pidcock, if both of them are having their best day, I think Pidcock wins the majority of those races. I think when Easerby wins, it takes him having a really good day and Pidcock not having things go perfect and be the perfect day for him.
And in this, go ahead, Bill. In this race, you saw, you know, I mean, Pidcock is just, you know, there's nothing. If Easerbeat is going to beat him, it's going to be in pure cyclocross skills. It's going to be somewhere that is muddy and technical, and that he can sort of use those skills to his advantage. This was not that race, and you saw this was our first real look at the damage that could be done on those long stretches by the seawall that we saw. And Pidcock, I mean, it was, you know, basically, you know, turning around and saying, hey guys, I'm right now in the next 2 seconds, I'm going to be attacking, and I'm going to be attacking really hard. So you might want to get ready. And then he just sort of like got out of his saddle and was gone. And it was like race over.
And no one could do anything about it. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think we saw exactly that last year at Worlds, Bill. That's kind of where Easerbeat, that's the kind of course more that Easerbeat needs to ride more with Thomas Pidcock. And then of course, like we had this year, I mean, he was clearly dominant, and there's no question that he deserved that victory. So David, any input you want to give us? Are you good? Is David still here?
I had some unstable internet there. Go ahead.
Just any comments on the men's U23?
As you were saying, that Pidcock really dominated, and I think that there's that chance that he's going to move up and be a la Vanderpool with that sense of, you know, to your point, Bill, I'm going now. Who's coming with me? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I think we're a long way from seeing that in the elite ranks.
I don't know. You talk to the British and they'll tell you differently. Scotty.
Well, of course. That's fine.
I'm not what he thinks.
but I mean, I think it's one thing. It's going to be a whole nother ball game too, yeah. You know, so we'll see.
I will see, you know, going back to the Americans, I know, Gage, not taking anything away from, he was one of the, from his performance, but he really, really, really was hoping for more from this race, especially after his performance last year in the U23. So I think that he was hoping and expecting to be a little bit further up than 12th place. So, but
yeah. So
did you have
Gage
a chance to talk
top
with the
American
Americans?
At 12th?
No, I mean I just knew that him and that he just him specifically that he was hoping to do better.
Yeah,
I'm sure he at least wanted to be in the top 10. Yeah. You know, that would have been and probably.
And I think he's
pushing for top five.
Right. Even. I think he's proven that he's able to definitely fight for that top five in this field.
Yeah. Yep. So Gage Hecht was the top American in 12th place. In 16th place was Spencer Petroff. 22nd place, Lance Haidt. In 23rd place, Cooper Wilsey. In 24th place, Brandon Fix.
Sam Knoll in 39th
place was Sam Knoll. And is that it? That
Ryan
is...
Camp. You missed Ryan Camp. He was 7th.
Where? Oh, of course. Wait, let me go back. There he is. Ryan Camp in 7th place. Yeah. Top. Oh, wait. Dutch rider. No.
He's our Dutch guy with the American name. Remember, he's from like St. Louis.
We should figure out a way to pronounce that so it sounds more Dutch. So, all right. Well, that's the American field for the U23 men. And the best race of the day, in my opinion, was still coming in the elite women's race, as it often is, the elite women's race, the best race of the day. So, coming into this, you know, we talked about over and over again how the common thing was everyone was, there's 10 riders that could win this. There's 10 riders. There was at least 10 riders probably that could win this. And I think going into this race, a lot of people were kind of forgetting about Sané Kant in a way. You know, it was kind of like everybody's swirling around Sané Kant. And we didn't really give, in my opinion, or at least maybe I didn't, we didn't really give Sané Kant her due coming in as the defending champion.
Is there any year in the past three where she's won that we have?
That might be true. I think you're probably right there, Bill. And I like Sané Kant a lot. I really like her racing. And no, but I think you're right. Can you think of one?
It's because she is she played this season perfectly. And I think that she, you know, there were those years before, I think, where she still, even before she had won a world championship, where she came out of the blocks and wanted to win everything. And she did. I mean, remember those years where she was winning like 10, 12, 15 races in a row and was like unstoppable. And then that was the year, end of the year. Yeah, Lucinda Brand shows up and takes the, you know, world championship or Vols or whoever. And she's like, well, it's just not fair that these roadies are showing up, you know, and she's working all season long. Where I think she has the professionalism and also the confidence that she's okay. She doesn't have to be at her best all year long, and it's fine. And she's still winning races, but not every race. And then she comes out for Worlds, and you know, we saw it. I mean, we even commented on this show, like in the last month or so, it was like, oh, here she comes. You know, just getting stronger and stronger.
It's like it's like she's figured out the formula, right, that works for her. And this is the way she's learned to be effective all through the season and then still have a really good chance to win at Worlds. And I think, in my opinion, Sané Kant rode as close to a perfect race as I've seen. I mean, I've watched that race, I think, four times now, and show me a mistake that she makes.
And it's also...
I don't see it.
Yeah, and the other thing is that when we look at this course, David, and we look at Sané Khan, and we look at Lucinda Brand especially, and Mariana Voss especially, and we think, oh, there are some diesels out there who are going to just crush her when it comes to these long stretches. I mean, that's not her forte, but... didn't happen.
Yeah, and Bill, to that point, you look at it again and you want to predict that same race again. She was in with four Dutch women. And it was a road race. It wasn't, I'm not going to say grass crit and all that stuff, right? But it came down to, there was the long road section that came into that finishing straight.
I would say road power was certainly an advantage,
asset, right?
It was helpful for sure. Yeah.
And my thing with Sané Khan is she has matured amazingly as a racer, right? To exactly what you guys were saying, in the sense of she doesn't feel, or it seems that she doesn't feel that she has to go out and win every race every time, but she really kind of picks and chooses. And when she picks and chooses, when she attacks, and she attacked at the perfect time and just laid it out there and didn't let it become a road race. She controlled that race. It wasn't that anyone lost the race to Sané Khan. Sané Khan won that race.
Yes. All right. So let's just get the top five out of the way. So in first place was, of course, Sané Khan. In second place, Lucinda Brand. In third place, Mariana Voss. In fourth place, Denise Betsema. And in fifth place, Anne-Marie Vers. That is, yes, one Belgian winner and four Dutch riders behind her.
Yeah,
so,
which is we have the converse of that when we get to the men's race, which I think is also a kind of a telling sort of social commentary on men's and women's racing in both Belgium and the Netherlands, where in the you have it's kind of interesting because you have all of these strong women, and we think of the Netherlands as the strongest, and you have like the one sole Belgian hope out there who's taking the win, and then once we get to the men, no real surprise here. You have Vanderpool, the one Dutch guy by birth, sort of lives and trains in Belgium, and then all the Belgians, where we think of the strongest men are on the Belgian side, are all chasing him down. So it was kind of interesting how that played out.
Yeah, for sure. Bill, there's been a lot of talk about, or there was a lot of talk about the pit exchange in this women's race that happened in the second to last lap. But you were just telling us about some lap time information.
Yeah.
Hit us with that again.
Yeah. So, we'll talk about this. It was Lucinda Brand coming into the pit, and if that cost her a world championship, which I think a lot of like on the spot commentators were saying that, yes, if not for that pit exchange, she wins the world championship. I would argue that that's not the case. And if we look at the performance that Sané Khan put in and her lap times, just like what David was talking about and her picking her time, she started out third fastest lap time, fourth fastest lap time, fourth fastest lap time, and then by the end, her last two laps, she had the fastest lap times of anyone. So
yes.
And Lucinda Brand had the one where the mistake happens, and then the next lap she only has the third fastest lap. Like Voss is even faster with her, so it's not like
she was going to run down Sané Khan had that pit exchange not
right. And
been
you can be like, oh
disaster.
Well, it was in her head; she was thinking about it. Maybe she'd given up or that kind of stuff. But I think it's just the opposite kind of happens in those situations where you get that adrenaline burst, and then you're just ready to go. The funny thing for me is like we all were, not watching the race. We're basically when you're a photographer at these races, it's like you're at your local race. You can listen to the PA a little bit, but mainly you're seeing it you're seeing it live. You're only seeing them when they come by you, and you only see a situation. So we knew, that Sané was out there, and the only indication we had that something had gone wrong was the huge roar that went out. So like the gasp Like, you know, we're all like, well, somebody crashed somewhere, because there was just this huge gasp through the whole venue, because, you know, the small amount of people who were actually around the pits. And I'm not, I don't, well, I guess Scott would probably go and stand there and watch the race, watching the pits. But most people are going to be like where the actual features of the course are. But everybody's just watching on the huge screen that's there. And it was just was like, yeah. And yeah, so let's, I know you guys already, you already had your cathartic time on Bike Shop CX talking about this exchange, but you know, just for those people who maybe aren't caught up on that stream yet, Scott Diedenbach, this is your, this is Scott Diedenbach's in defense of the mechanic corner.
Is this a rant?
Is this a rant-free zone? Do I have, I'm free to speak my mind?
Yeah, this is a safe space.
Well, I mean, my biggest one, I think the idea that, you know, as was announced on the UCI broadcast, you know, that if Lucinda Brand doesn't win this race, it is because of a mechanic in the pit. And the other commentator saying absolutely 100% to me is just terrible. That's just to throw a mechanic under the bus like that and put that on somebody. I know it was Lucinda Brand's father, right? I know that was, he was the guy that was catching the bike. But to throw that on anybody at that, in that situation, this was, and I know, and I agree with you, Bill. It's like what you say on the, at the spur of the moment, right as it happens, you could maybe, you know, say something that didn't happen or something, but this was way later in the race. You know, after several minutes had gone by, and they say that, I'm going to stick up for the mechanics every time. And since I posted the Bike Shop CX show where I did go on that rant about this, I've actually had 4 mechanics contact me either social media or email saying, thank you for saying what you said. Right. The other thing people should do is go read Neil Rogers' article. He talked to Mark Legg and to what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. Bill, help me out.
All for who?
Adam Meyerson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. He got great quotes from both of them. Both saying the mechanic's job at that point, we call that position in the pit the catcher, right? All that person does is catch the bike as the rider delivers it to them. The idea that a mechanic can grab the bike early is just not one that makes any sense to me as a mechanic. It's not something that ever happens in any bike exchange that I've ever been a part of. I don't even, that person is standing still.
And you're not,
and the bike comes right to them.
And you're not anticipating that the rider's foot still may be in that bike and hasn't. Unattached, which is what happened.
The only other option the mechanic has at that point is to not catch the bike,
right?
And then it's going to slam into the incoming bike, right? And that's the worst thing that could happen, right? Is because now you could potentially have 2 bikes that are broken or muddy or whatever, you know, one broken and one full of mud, and now you're really scrambling. So I think the idea that that's anything to do with the mechanic is just, and it's also why in a lot of the elite, in all the elite pits and the World Cup pits, the mechanics will help each other out, and they always say, hey, do you want me to catch? And it's like, yeah, sure, if you can. You know, if I don't have a person that can help me, I'm like, yeah, anybody can come up and catch for me, because it's not a timing thing. All it is a matter of standing there, and the bike comes to you, and you catch it.
Right, and so you don't want that. And as a, you know, a mechanic for a competitor, it still behooves you not to have that bike flying into your stuff.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Absolutely right. So the only other option the mechanic had at that point was to not catch the bike and let it race through and slam into everything, which is just, you know, come on. So I think and we said this on the Bike Shop CX show too, I think if you look at what was going on in the Dutch pit all day, I don't know if you probably didn't see it, Bill. Earlier in the race, there was a point where Voss and Verst come in very close together, right? Into the same pit lane, obviously, both being Dutch riders. And they barely get them out. Voss even has to do this kind of pause and step and reach back and grab the bike with no momentum on it and kind of pull it up and get it going so she can re-enter the course. So I, in my opinion, I think the Dutch pit in general and the Dutch, the exchanges between the Dutch riders and pit, it looked to me more like a team that just didn't have a lot of practice working together.
Yeah.
You know, and to even, blame one guy and say, this is the, you know, is just,
but even,
bad.
Even so, that's the worst case scenario, no pun intended there, of having riders from the same team or the same nation coming in at the same time. I mean, we saw that earlier in I think it was a World Cup with Telenet Fidea, where they had two or even three guys, you know, they're basically coming in on a group ride, all changing bikes at the same time.
Yes.
And it's just chaos because they're all going to the same stall, and they're supposed to all like be able to know which bike is theirs and who's catching their bike and all this stuff happening just, you know, in a split second. I think even I can't remember which race it was, but it was a fast exchange. It was one of these, you know, they're coming in, they're blazing, and it was, I think somebody had a hurdle over a bike because it went sideways. But that's you're always going to run. I mean, those are just chaotic situations in the pits, and especially when you get more than one person coming in at the same time from the same team or nation.
Right.
Yeah. And I think we mentioned on the Bike Shop Sex Show about, you know, this is why pit exchanges, you don't think about practicing that. And it's why we harp on practicing pit exchanges so much. And we mentioned, I go into a little more detail on our show about, if you want to look at a team that has practiced this and really knows what they're doing with this, and I'm going to give them tons of credit because I've seen them do it and they are amazing. And I know this is at the collegiate level, not the elite world championship, but Marion University, because they are in this situation race after race after race, where they tend to have groups of riders at the lead end of the race coming in together, and they have this kind of stuff down to a science. Mm. Right. And this is a team that has practiced and practiced and practiced this and does it as good as anyone probably in the world after you see what happens, you know, what happens here. So there are, you know, places, people that do it and do a really excellent job at it. And so go out and check them out and give them credit for that. Yep. Yeah.
Nice. So
at the pro level, Jeremy Powers and Tom Hopper have really dialed in too. You know, those are two guys that work together so well.
Powers has a great pit exchange. Yep. Powers' pit exchange is amazing.
Yep.
He's great at it. Yes, absolutely. I still think Wout Van Aert is the best bike exchanger in the world, but Powers is right up there. I agree. I completely agree. So, and Sonny Kant is also maybe the best in the women's field, in my opinion, too. So, but also in general, Bill, I just think, you know, Lucinda Brand, I love Lucinda Brand. I think she's great for cyclocross. She's one of my favorite riders. She didn't ride a great race.
Yeah.
You know, she crashed in the first lap.
Yep.
You know, she went down and right away in the first lap, she did not handle the big off camber well. Right. At least two times that she hit that, she had big slowdowns where she really lost time on those. And then she had this exchange, pit exchange incident. So I think, you know, she certainly had some mistakes in there that she can improve and probably will, and is going to come back, you know, stronger than ever. And I can't wait to see it because, like I said, she's one of my favorite riders in the women's field. So
nice. Let's get to the potentially most exciting race of the World Championship.
Yep.
the U23 women was the next day. We didn't give the American finishers in the women's race.
We got to
do that real quick.
Yeah.
So in seventh place was Katie Keough, top American finisher. 16th place was Rebecca Ferringer. In 21st place was Ellen Noble. And in 30th place was Sammy Runnels. In 34th place, Katie Compton. And is that it? That's everybody?
Yeah.
I think that's everybody.
Great.
I don't see, there's no
great race for Keough. I think, you know, just capping off
what a great season for her.
Holy cow, gotta be up there with her best season, if not her best. I mean, she won a World Cup. I mean, she, you know, maybe did better overall in the World Cup last year. But to get that win is just pretty awesome. And then just having just really strong efforts, especially by the end of the season, just coming in and just crushing these races. So really good race for her.
Yeah, top top 10 at Worlds is never going to be anything to to laugh at. I mean, that's just a huge ride for her. So great, great job for her. So, all right. Do we want to move on then to the U23 women's race? Because I agree with you, Bill. Probably the most exciting race of the weekend. This was Sunday morning before the elite men's race. Way before the elite men's race.
Yeah. You got that 4-hour drinking period.
Gotta have that 4-hour beer time block in there. all right. So do we want to give the top five for this to start it off?
Go for it.
In first place, Inga van der Heijden. In second place, Fleur Nagengast. In third place, Celine del Carmen Alvarado. Fourth place, Silvia Persico.
Persico?
I don't know how. Persico. In fifth place, Anna Kay. Go ahead, Bill. Tell us what, I mean, this was great. What was it like down in the on the course?
This was a, we talked about road races in here, and this seemed like the most tactical race of the weekend by far. And I know I've been harping on it. The UCI actually gave us, for the first time that I've seen, you know, made it available to everyone, just this really great race analysis where we're seeing all the lap times and seeing where people landed on their laps. And if you look at this race, you know, it was, everybody's looking at Alvarado. Obviously she's the favorite here, and she rode like a favorite until the end. And we talk, I think that if you talk about Sané Kant, that what we're talking about and how much better of a tactical racer she has become, and strategically how much better she has become, I think that Alvarado kind of made some mistakes in those that last lap that cost her the championship. And if you, where it came down to a road race and it came down to positioning and saving your matches. And the thing that I didn't realize till I looked at these lap times is that the penultimate lap, was extremely strategic in that Inga van der Heijden had the 16th fastest lap time on that next to last lap. So her winning lap, her final lap, she put in the fastest lap of that lap, and it was a 6:43, 6 minutes 43 seconds. That was actually one of the fastest laps. That may have been the fastest lap on the day. Okay.
Yeah.
The lap before, 7:16. 30 seconds slower. That is huge. Man. I mean, that is just almost soft pedaling for these women and what that meant. And if you look at it, Alvarado, 11th fastest. She was 7:15. You look at Persico, 7:15 also. Anna Kay.
This is on the second to last
Second to last one. The interesting one is that allowed Fleur to get back in it.
Right.
Yeah.
So she was able to get back into that group because she put in a 7:07, fifth fastest time. Even, you know, you go down farther to the woman that I thought who was going to do great in this race, Yara Kastelein, had the fastest time that lap. I mean, she ended 11th in the race, but that got her from 30 seconds down to 11 seconds down. That's how much that this race just slowed down, and they were looking at each other and they were kind of, you know,
seeing
who was going to go. So here's my question to you, Bill.
Yeah.
Is this a tactical error on Celine's part, or did she not have anything left in the tank? Did she not realize she needed to go in that penultimate lap, or did she not have anything to give in that penultimate lap?
No, I think that she played that fine. I think that she played the last lap wrong, and she felt like she should be the strongest, and she attacked too much in that one,
right?
And then she had nothing left, you know, and getting and what it came down to was she was passed. There was this huge flyover right before the finishing stretch, and she got passed on that flyover. I mean, she was leading coming into the home stretch, and I think just didn't have it, you know, wasn't able to have that final push.
It looked to me a little bit like Alvarado didn't have great legs all day.
Yeah.
From the start. It just kind of looked to me like she didn't have the snap and the power that we've seen her Haverly. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything, but I mean, maybe it just is like one of those days where you get up and it's just like, man, it's just not there. I've done everything right, but it's just for some reason, it's just not there. She looked like she was really struggling a little bit the whole race and didn't have the snap and the power in her legs that she was used to. And I still think she did make a few of those little mistakes, like you said at the end, Bill. But yeah, I just kind of got that feeling the whole time because I was waiting for her to go. And it was like she just couldn't make it happen. So I don't know. That was just what I thought.
I think you're right. Especially, I mean, she was a world beater just a week before winning an elite race.
Exactly.
You know, big elite race against all of the top riders. And like, boom, there she is. And you're like, whoa, she is unbeatable. Yeah. So I think, you know, it happens, right?
Right. Sure.
I mean, look, just today, you know, this the unheard of happened where Matthew Vanderpoel said, you know, after yesterday, he just felt like he didn't have super legs anymore, which has got to just be insulting to the rest of the field.
Yeah, you got to hear that and go,
oh man.
God.
Yeah, it's like when you finish that big long group ride and come up, roll up at the finish line, and say, "Oh, damn, my brake's been rubbing the whole time."
Yeah.
Right. All right, for the Americans in the U23 women's race, in seventh place, Katie Klaus. What a great ride by her. 10th place, Clara Hansinger. Looking down in 25th place, Madigan Monroe, and in 31st place, Emma Schwartz. And is there anybody I'm not thinking of? That's it. That's everybody, right?
Yeah. Great finish. Great finish by Klaus. A photo finish in winning basically by about a centimeter to get that seventh place, which was pretty cool to see.
Clara Hansinger too with a great ride.
Oh, yeah,
she was up there.
They were riding together most of the race, and definitely.
Bill, my question to you on those two.
Yeah,
it looked like something happened maybe at the start, or they didn't have a good grid position because both of them were. I think it was actually Klaus was kind of in it, chasing that front group a little bit, and Hansinger was way back and managed to fight all the way back. I think she was hoping for maybe one more lap to push through, or did something happen that cost her too many matches early on?
I don't think anything happened, but I think you're exactly right where Katie Klaus definitely had a better start and was right up there. I mean, she was right up there with those top five, like right up, trying to close that gap pretty early. And I think, and then, you know, Klaus and Hansinger also worked pretty hard to bring, you know, when we were talking about, you know, that tactical stuff that was happening up front, they were working hard to bring that group back, you know, to the point that by the next to last lap, they were 1 second off the front group. You know, they were right there. They pretty much had brought it back, and then it sort of went out a little from there. But both those, they looked really, really strong. The other, you know, non-American I wanted to just kind of quickly mention that had a great race and is Anna Kay, who, you know, signed for more than a couple years, I think, with Helen Wyman's new team. So that was pretty cool. And I think that that's really neat for Helen, especially for what she's built over the years, and now to be able to mentor these younger riders. But having somebody like Anna Kay on that team, I think it's going to be really, really cool to watch.
Yeah, with both her and Harriet Harnden.
Yep.
I mean,
and
that's going to be the two
for
British,
sure.
The two young British women riders, just going to be amazing to watch in the years to come.
And we were all talking about, you know, is this the year, right, with Helen? Is this the year that Helen steps away and is done? And not at all in the fact that she's going to play a large role in the development of those two young women.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. All right, anything else we want to talk about U23 women?
Nah, just such a fun field to watch, and more power to that Dutch cycling, and more strong women up the top, and they're just dominating the sport.
Now, before we move on to the elite men, I just want to go back to the elite women for 1 second, because you know who we did not mention at all?
Katie Compton.
Was Yolanda Neff.
Neff, yeah.
Sixth place, was it?
Yes, she was sixth place overall. And man, oh man, what a ride she put in, you know, coming up, starting fourth row, was it? I think something like that. And being a player in the lead group, you know, before the end. It was definitely a heck of a ride by her. So
fastest right. lap of the race.
Yeah. Six. What? Which lap was it?
Second full lap.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Man, it's would have been interesting to see what with a higher starting spot what she could have done.
Yeah, it was interesting. She definitely did struggle a little near the end though. Mm-hmm. You know, she and. Who knows, you know, what happened there, but yeah, going from a 7:17 lap from in the penultimate one to a 6:59 for the final lap. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the elite men. In first place, Matthew Vanderpoel, second place Wout Van Aert, third place Tone Aerts, fourth place Michael Van Thurnout, fifth place Lorenz Sweek. Finally, Matthew Vanderpoel, in my opinion, I think we saw the culmination of a season of the season that Matthew Vanderpoel has had, where in the past you see him winning, but still having some issues and not commanding races like he has this year, in my opinion. I think this year he has become the complete rider that he needs to be to put it all together for Worlds, and I think he did it. And we had a bit of a race there for a few laps. Wout kind of stays with him, but in the end, Vanderpoel just kind of goes when he's ready. Makes a great move on the off camber, and you know, sees the rest of the field get delayed, and off he goes and race over. Any comments? And we have four, just like we were saying, Bill. You got four Belgians, you got a Dutch rider, and then four Belgians. So,
yeah, and then another still. Then David Lars van der Haar is the bookend on the other end of that.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, David? I mean, yeah, he gave the race to Vanderpoel, let's be honest. I don't know that Vanderpoel could have won it without him.
He kind of made it possible there, didn't he? On that first gap?
Yeah.
He certainly looked like he comes into that race going, all right, I'm going to help Matthew, right? This is, I think, you know, his chances of probably overpowering Wout and Tone in that race were lower than the outcome of him helping Vanderpoel. So I think he was willing to do that and show that he was.
And he was by getting that off camber completely wrong and allowing Vanderpoel to get a little gap. So he's a good teammate.
And then he like sits up, looks around.
Yeah.
Yeah, they even call for a natural, everyone. That's right, I thought, but I don't know if I call that one right. But yeah. So what do you think? How does that first meeting go when they bring back the Telenet Fide Alliance team camp and he has to tell Tune about it?
I will say this, that I was happy to see Vanderpoel win. I think that he is truly, even at 24 years old, one of the greatest cyclocross racers we will ever see. Already.
Yes. And
by getting this second world championship jersey, he matches Sven. So you can't, if you want to just go against what people are going to say is the greatest, he already has as many world championships as Sven. And of course, you can say, well, that was always Sven's Achilles heel, was winning worlds. But so he's matched that. And now he's like catching these other records, like with the super prestige and other wins, you know. So, but more than that, what I loved is here's a guy who makes seven figures racing his bike. Who mm-hmm. has said, and I know it's he's why he's saying, and I love the quote, but people are like, you're bad for cyclocross, and he's like, I get paid to win races, you know, is always his response, which I think is a great response, and you can look at that and go, oh well, it's just a job, but to see the emotion at the finish line for him winning just kind of shows you that even at that level, that it's still that important getting that rainbow jersey. And that's the kind of stuff. And the same thing for Sana Khan, even though it was her third, that I think that solidifies her as one of the greats, and being able to do that when, again, she's not the favorite coming into this race. I think for both of them, just seeing the emotion from them winning these races is that's what excites me. I see that and I go, man, it's good. Cause from a Cat 5 to the, you know, a millionaire winning his second one where he wins everything, it still means almost the same. Like that's that same emotion is there. And that's kind of what keeps me in the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think both of those victories solidify both of them as, you know, in the discussion for the greatest, you know, ever in this sport. For both of them, I think what Sané Kant did, to me, this is one of the most impressive races she's ever ridden. And same thing with Vanderpool. I think he's his head. It's not about his legs. He's had the legs to win since he won the first time, right? It's all about his head, in my opinion, and the way he approaches stuff, and he overcomes problems now rather than problems multiplying into catastrophes. Now he manages them, overcomes them, and still wins by huge amounts. So yeah, I think he's shown all season long he is just the complete rider now. And man, oh man, look out, because he's coming back next year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's already
for sure. Yeah.
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 As is Wout, which was great to hear. Still wants to do it, which I love. The thing with Vanderpool's is that it was the same thing we talked about Pidcock. It was like those long straights, and he basically was like, guys, I'm going, you know, and he just put in these efforts, and you're like, holy cow, the engine on this guy is insane. But where he does it, you know, the full package, as we talked about that off camera jokingly, you know, where he was able to get away. That thing was like, I mean, I haven't, you know, it looked bad enough on TV, but what I don't think you could tell is like, it was a asphalt walking path at the top. It's where people, it's a big like dog walking area. And they, you know, you had that transition from the off camber up to the walking path that throughout the week just deteriorated more and more and more. And they were throwing, you know, like the kitty litter over the side to try to keep a little bit of solidity to it. But it wasn't happening. And that was the thing that, you know, people were just up there sessioning all week long and trying to do it. And you know, the funny thing was like the whole Telenet team was going through there, and you'd see them roll through, and everybody's dabbing and getting off and that kind of stuff. But the guy, like just in the black Trek kit that was sort of leading that train, would sit there and just ride it clean every time, and ride it clean, and then turn around. And it's like, come on, guys. I'm retired and I can still do this. Yeah, it was like,
do I have to bring my son out here to show you how to do this?
Oh, and Tebow, and that was it. Like Sven and Tebow both were able to just rail that section. It's kind of hilarious that Tebow's kind of he's got that. I know that he gets it drilled into him, but they both had that line, and even Sven was up there with Tebow a lot, you know, making sure that he knew the line to take to be able to ride that clean. So it was kind of interesting. Yeah. But Vanderpool just does it, you know, almost. He's up there practice. Actually, I didn't see him do as many practice laps. It's almost instinctively that he's able to do it. And what I was going to bring up is like, as opposed to the power, just the technical skills. Did you guys see the Maldegem race earlier this week?
I did not see that. During the week on Wednesday.
Yeah,
right?
So it was this pretty flat one. It was a lot of these, you know, sort of like switchback 180s, just 180 after 180, just a long thing. And it was like super slick. I mean, people were sliding through the whole thing. And it's a great race to go back and watch, because you can see Vanderpool solving the puzzle lap after lap. And it's one of these races, mm-hmm. like people are like, oh, I just like watching him ride. It's great. It's like, I like watching a race. But at the same time, this was one of those where, and he would have this controlled drift that like the first couple laps, he was kind of sliding out around all these turns and sliding out around the town. By the end, he was just this controlled, like 8 to 12 inch drift around every turn that he had just dialed in. That he was just like scraping seconds off of off of these lap times, just being able to just sort of like skate and surf around these turns just one after another. And it's just like, it's just so amazing to watch him just figure it out and his body just sort of click in and go, okay, this is how much pressure I need to like lose traction in my rear tire to get around this turn. And just whoop, whoop, whoop. Yeah, that's just amazing stuff.
Very cool. So Americans in the elite men's race, 21st place, Curtis White. I believe, was Curtis the only American not to get pulled?
I believe so.
Yes.
I think he was in 20.
And what a season Curtis White has had.
Yeah, 21st place. Oh, I mean, he's right there for a top 20 spot, you know, right behind David Vanderpool. So, you know, he's 4 seconds off there, and I'm sure that would have been really cool. And not that 21st is not cool, but man, Bill, and you're the, you know, I'd kind of forgotten about Curtis earlier on in the season, and Bill, you're the one that kind of like reminded me at some point during the season, hey, don't, if you're not paying attention to Curtis White, you're missing something.
Yep.
And you are dead on with that, man, because what a season Curtis White has had. And this is the culmination of it, and it's awesome. So
yeah, and you can see that he really got stronger at the end of this race. You know, it was it's so hard in these fields. You know, he gets stuck in these groups. So like early on, his lap times were like in the top 30s to 40s. And then as soon as he's starting to get some space and you see him come on, it's like top 13, top 15, top 16, top 16 when he finishes it. So he is just, he was putting in, you know, take away a lap. And of course, this is cyclocross. He's easily putting in top 20 times the whole race, except for one or two laps. So that's,
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be exciting. I think he's, I don't know if he's mentioned it, if he's continuing on doing more cross racing, I guess, right? I don't know why not. Or is he getting a... I know he's graduated from school now, right? Does anybody know?
I don't know. Either.
Yeah. So, anyways, other Americans in 31st place was Kerry Werner. In 32nd place was Stephen Hyde. A little bit further down in 42nd place was Cody Kaiser, 43rd, Anthony Clark, and that's the field. That's the U.S. field right there. So, all right, there we go. Anything else we want to talk about with the elite men's race? Anyone else you guys want to mention, throw out there?
You want to throw out our picks Canadians?
How did our picks do? We did Vanderpool. Me and Bill. David, you had Tone. You had Vanderpool in third. Bill, you had Vanderpool, Wout, Tone.
Yeah.
I had Vanderpool, Wout, Tone.
Yeah.
So there we go. And David had Tone, Wout, Vanderpool.
No, I had Tone, Vanderpool, Wout.
Oh.
At least that's what I've written down here.
You wrote it wrong. You probably wrote it wrong and I wrote it right.
Probably.
Just kidding. So, yeah, there we go. Those were the three guys I think most people picked on the podium. So, all right, guys. Well, did anything else we want to talk about worlds in general?
Sorry to step on your toes here. I think we all did pick as our dark horse Michael Van Turnhout, who came in fourth.
Yeah, we all did. That's cool. Yeah, and overall, we did pretty good with our picks. We had a lot of our picks on the podium, maybe not in the spots that that it ended up being, but pretty close. So, hey, Bill, while I'm thinking of it, we got a really cool email on Bike Shop CX from Grimpoor Brothers, Dan from Grimpoor Brothers. And I was thinking maybe we could do this on the next show. And I actually think this is really funny and would be a really cool segment. He's like, since the Fayetteville Worlds has been announced, and he said he loved our show where we made our picks for this year. He's asking us to this year, like next show, make picks for the Fayetteville podiums.
Whoa, That's like,
how
that's
fun like would that be?
3 years away.
I know. But imagine how crazy that could be.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
So maybe on the next show, yeah, we'll give us some time to kind of look at it and figure it out. So, yeah.
I was just going to say, that's an awesome idea. And speaking of Dan and Grimper Brothers.
Yeah.
You know, not only is he just writing letters, but he's a sponsor for the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. And he also is offering up some exclusive Wide Angle Podium coffee blends that you, not just you, David and Scott, but you, the listener or viewer, can get into your coffee mug by getting his beans by going to wideanglepodium.com. Over on the right-hand side, you'll see the Grimper Brothers buttons there that you can click on for the full Schleck, which is a nice medium roast blend, and then also for the Hello Cyclocross Friends Espresso blend. Both awesome coffees. Both proceeds from both go back to the podcast network to help us do what we're doing right now. So that's pretty sweet. That's why we love Dan and Grimper Brothers.
Amazing.
It is.
Yes, absolutely.
And listen to Bike Shop CX. You can hear the winners of our contest giving away coffee.
We gave away 3 bags of coffee. Yeah. That's, and then 2 people got t-shirts. So,
I mean, that's...
And they... They freaked out, man. I've gotten, David, you probably have too. I've gotten all kinds of like cool stuff of the people that won, all being all excited. So that was awesome.
For sure.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
You know, while we're talking about Wide Angle Podium, I think that, you know, it is late cyclocross season, you know, road season just around the corner. I believe that the shows on the Wide Angle Podium are putting out some of the best content that we have in the past 12 months right now. I mean, you guys crushing it on the World's Tech Show that everybody should check out for Bike Shop CX. The Gravel Lot has just been doing awesome. They have Eric Oliver, who is, you know, I've been running now. That's kind of my new thing I've been out there doing. And he's got Eric Oliver, running specialist and founder and president of Beyond Exercise. So I'm actually really interested in checking that one out. And then we move down to the Slow Ride. Dude, the Slow Rider got Mitch Docker on their show. And
what?
It was awesome.
It was an amazing show. I just knew that show.
So freaking good. I giving these guys this much praise hurts me to my soul. You have to know that. But
I'm just kidding, guys. I know you had Mitch on. I just have not gotten to it yet, but I will.
Yeah,
I promise.
It's just undeniable. That is one that you definitely, that's worth the price of admission, that price being you, viewer. Going to wideanglepodium.com, clicking on the donate, becoming a member, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever it is, it's well worth it. It helps us continue to put these shows out, to have the Slow Ride, have guests like Mitch Docker on there, which was just so sweet. And then I got my swag, and it's pretty dang cool. I got my phone holster. I got my arrow pins. I got my sticker pack, which the stickers this year are just above and beyond. They're
next
great
level,
great looking. I already put my Hello Cyclocross Friends sticker on my computer, so very, very happy about that. And we love doing these shows. We love putting out all of this content for you. And you know, it doesn't take a lot for you to be a part of our family. We got a newsletter that we've been sending out that we've had great reactions to as well. So you'll be in on that as well. And you'll just help us support what we do. And it means a lot to us, and it helps us continue to bring you programming.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself, Bill.
You probably could have said it shorter.
It was a bit rambly, but that's all right.
That's
how I roll.
An entire off season, or as we call it, cyclocross preseason, to get
exactly.
it down.
Exactly. Cross is coming.
It is.
It is. It is. CX is coming. Season is coming. We can start. Well, we CX still got season. One more super.
CX season isn't over yet. It still is coming. Coming season.
Is coming. we still have one more. I mean, the Super Prestige series is kind of decided, but I mean, it would take major, major catastrophes for things to change. But we do still have one more Super Prestige race.
And then we got we got Waregem too, right? The cyclocross the cyclocross prom.
Right, homecoming. But we did have a couple of races this weekend. Probably the slightly more important was on Saturday, was the Deveve final in Lila, however you pronounce it, Quatten Cross. We wanted to give the results of that. I'm thinking we'll do the elite women and the elite men results for that.
Yep.
Does that sound good?
Yep.
All right, we'll start with the women's race. First place was Sonic Khan. This was the second opportunity, I think, to see both Sonic Khan. Well, she's been wearing the rainbow jersey, but, you know, chance to see Matthew after the Wednesday race in the world championship jersey. So that was kind of cool. But for the women, first place, Sané Kant. Second place, Denise Betsema. Third place, Lois Sells. Fourth place, Inga Vanderheiden with an amazing ride. We were just talking about her. And in fifth place, Nikki Bramier. Americans that are over there that hung out after World Championships. In 28th place was Rebecca Ferringer. And in 29th place was Erica Zavetta.
Yeah, nice ride
yes.
for her.
Yeah. Awesome to see that. 42nd place, Emily Werner. 47th place, Rebecca Gross, still over there. And in 48th place, Corey Coogan-Sissick. And I think that's it for the Americans over there. So, what did you guys... Did you guys watch this? I think it was interesting. You know, you think that Sané Kant basically... I think had the only person that could beat her in the overall for the series was Sells, I think, because I don't know, if just so people know, this is the timed series, right? It's not by points. It's by overall time. If you completely don't finish a race for mechanical reasons or whatever, the max, I think this is still the rule, I haven't checked in a year or two, is that you can lose is 5 minutes.
Right. I think that's still right? correct. Yep.
Yeah, so even if you're sick or if you crash and you don't finish a race, the most time you can lose is 5 minutes. So the only rider within that amount of time that could possibly beat her was Lois Sells. So I kind of expected, and it looked like Sané Kant did kind of mark her for a while, stay on her wheel and say like, all right, as long as I stay, you know, here, I'm good. Inga Vanderheiden just off the front looking amazing, coming off of her U23 Worlds win, and looked like a world beater the first couple laps, then kind of died a little bit. Sané Kant kind of like looked like she then decided, like, okay, I got good legs, I'm just going to go again, goes again and gets this win. So did you guys watch this, and do you have any thoughts on what happened?
I did watch it, and what I saw here is... When you look at this, when you watch this race, it shows what we were talking about before, that the skill of Sané Kant to race a cyclocross race. It's not just the pure power. Her ability to stay on the bike or make good decisions when to shoulder versus when to push the bike, when to drag the bike. I think she just outrode Betsema and Sells, both.
Yeah.
Just making really good decisions with the power that she has.
Yep. Yep. Bill, comments?
I think y'all covered it.
I mentioned Katie Compton in seventh, right?
Yeah.
I did mention that, right? Okay. All right. Yeah, so Sané Kant gets the overall win in the Deveve series for the women. Lois Sells gets second. Nikki Bramier third. And Laura Verdonschot fourth. And Ellen Van Looy is fifth. There might have been an outside chance that Bramier could have won the overall if both the other two... I mean, it might have been mathematically possible. I don't want people to think I don't look at Bramier, but it would have been very unlikely. So anyways, on to the men's race. For that, in first place was Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Michael Vanthernout. Third place, Tone Aerts. Fourth place, Lars Vandehaar. Fifth place, Lauren Sweek. I know the Americans that were still over there. Kerry Werner is still over there. He got 30th place. Eric Thompson was 35th for the U.S. Andrew Giuliano was 39th. Dylan Pot, I don't know how to pronounce Dylan's name. Posture was 42nd. Tyler Cloutier, doing his last race of his Europe adventure, was 43rd. So there we go for the Americans in that race. Matthew Vanderpool, of course, clinches the overall in the Deveve series. With a he's plus 126 over Tone Air to a second. Michael Vandenhout was third, plus 550. Lawrence Sweek was fourth, and Lars Vandehaar was fifth in the overall. Matthew Vanderpool, I don't want to give anything away, but he's going to win the next day too. Basically, by clinching both series, I don't know if you guys saw this article, but he basically earned, I think, over 62,000 euro nice. Last weekend.
That's a good weekend.
Assuming he's going to win the Super Prestige overall, too, because he basically clinched it. I think, again, mathematically, he could still lose it, but it'd be very, very unlikely. Yeah. He'd have to, like, not finish at all or something. And Tone would have to win. So, yeah, not a bad little weekend for Matthew Vanderpool. Any comments about that men's race?
The one comment that I would like to make is that, you know, you talked about Drew Giuliano in 39th place. Drew has been writing what he has penned, the Derp Report, which is Giuliano's embedded race perspective, where he which is on cxairs.com, and he's got three of them up so far, and it's kind of a cool little inside the tape look at the races at the highest level, and the sort of a view that he has from the back of what's going on, and just kind of giving a little more insight into these riders and what it's like to race some of these big races.
So yeah, is that why cool. he's been finishing back there? You've asked him to kind of hang back.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, it's yeah. it's completely a journalistic pursuit.
Yeah, that's yeah. very big of him.
Yeah, yeah that is you know, that is.
We all do it for the art.
That's it.
The following day, we had the second to last Super Prestige race in Hoogstraten. We'll start out with the elite women there. In first place was Sanne Kant, second place Anne-Marie Wurst, third place Denise Betsema, fourth place Lois Sells, fifth place Celine Del Carmen Alvarado. I did not get to watch this. Was there any standout thing that we should mention about this? Did you guys get to watch it?
Trying to think. I feel like I saw some of this. No, I mean, just, you know, Sané still just carrying
doing
on.
Doing her thing.
Doing her yeah. thing. It looks like, you know, Alvarado got those legs back, was the top U23 rider in this race, kind of up in that the top five, really, where we have been expecting to see her throughout the season. So, yeah, kind of cool. kind of an interesting return there. But, you know, yeah. just...
I did watch it, and I mean, just to disagree a little bit with you, Bill, I think that when you're looking at Celine Del Carmen Alvarado's legs, she was plodding. When there were times when you would have expected her to kind of jump on it and close gaps.
Yeah.
She looks like she's starting to show a very long yeah. season. In
well,
in
this race too, we shouldn't, you know, sort of, you know, bury the lead here. This was just insane conditions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was a slog fest.
Yeah. Like pouring cold rain over this course that I think that Drew was even saying like three, you know, he was like, I finished, which was good because three other people were taken off on stretchers.
Yeah, including just, David
yeah,
Vanderpool.
Yeah.
Which just, we'll talk about. Yeah. yeah
just in the conditions just from the just muddy, steep off cambers and just. It honestly, it looked miserable.
Yeah. Second cross right. weather.
Yeah. Well, let's slide over to the men's race. In first place was Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Tone Aerts. Third place, Corne Van Kessel. Nice. Fourth place, Eli Easerbeet. And in fifth place, Thomas Pidcock. American men, for the American men that were over there, who raced this race? Eric Thompson was 37th. And anybody who else was over there?
Yeah.
Was 43rd place was Andrew Giuliano, and in 48th place was Dylan Postier.
Was it this race or the day before where Eric Thompson got the good air time because he was like right in the middle of that starting grid crash?
It was this
it
one.
Must have been this one because yeah. I didn't see that. Yeah. And I watched the day before.
What? And that's a big, big old pile up.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man. Also, crashing in this race was David Vanderpool. We mentioned that. Sounds like his knee could potentially be hurt a little bit. Yeah. I mean, if you got to crash, it's good to crash after Worlds and at the end of the season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you
he's had a great season, though. He's had a really good season.
What a great season he's had. Yes, he's been a great, great fun to watch him all season long.
The one thing we didn't mention from the weekend, I just want to slide in here when we get back to the men, is that Thibaut Ness swept for the junior men. So,
look out next cyclocross season.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a sign of things to come, what we're seeing there with that guy. So, that's going to be something that next year, in our season preview show, Bill, next year, we'll have to make sure we remember that.
I'm calling Thibaut.
We probably won't forget the name Nice, though, right? We'll
here's my little spoiler question for y'all. Oh, God, how old will he be? Maybe he'll just be U23. I was going to ask where he's going to be on the podium in Arkansas.
Fayetteville.
But I think he'll still be U23 at that point.
He might get some U23 top of the podium picks from the three of us, I'm guessing.
For sure.
Next show. Won't that be fun to do, though?
Yeah, it'd be
I'm excited to do
some
that.
Definitely. All right, some crystal ball stuff.
All right, guys, anything else? That covers it. I know there was a lot of results that we had to get through, and it's a long show, but anything else we want to talk about, or should we sign off? Bill, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best place to do it?
CX Hairs on Twitter, although I'm rarely there these days, and on Instagram, and then just shoot me an email at feedback@cxhairs.com. Love hearing from you all.
Excellent. David.
Mr. David Palin on the Instagram and on the Twitter.
All right. And you can get a hold of me, Scott Diedenbach, at Bike Shop CX on both Instagram and Twitter as well. And or send us, say, your questions or tech questions to bikeshopshow@gmail.com for the tech show.
I got one more thing. If you're in the D.C. area, or actually this year, you can actually travel.
Garage
races starting March 2nd is the first one. We've moved from Wednesday to Saturday. So now people from out of town can come in and check out what it's like to be racing underground in our garage race series. Lots of fun and exciting announcements coming up from there. We used to have three fields. We're expanding that, where we now have four races per weekend, and it's going to be good times.
That thing is exploding.
Only $20 to race.
Wow, smart deal. The amount of fun you're going to have, even if you're not racing, is worth the $20.
Great. Yeah,
there you go.
They give you like $30 worth of fun.
We do.
You can come out a winner. You can come out $10 ahead.
We got
just by going. Food no, really, they do.
We got food down there. We got beer down there. It's a party. Little party.
Nice. All right, guys. Well, I will talk with you next time.
Sounds great.
See you later.